For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome everybody, Parsha Baloiska, in your Chumash chapter 8, verse 1, Torah portion opens up with the lighting of the menorah. Very profound significance. The menorah represents the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral law, right? While the Aron in the Mikdash, as you know, we discussed, everything represents something in many, many different facets, parallel to the human body, parallel to creation. But in another dimension, the Aron represents the written Torah, and the menorah, giving off light, represents the Talmud, basically, the Torah Shebal Peh. And Aron is given the commandment to light the menorah. Okay, and it says, chapter 8, verse 3, V'yaskev Aron, and Aron lit it. And says, Rashi, come to teach you, Shaloshina, he didn't deviate from what Hashem taught him. Hashem said, light the menorah, and guess what? Aron did it. Of course, the big question everybody asks on that is, you know, what's the choice, and what's the chiddush? I mean, first of all, what's the choice? That's true. I mean, from Aron, would you expect anything else? Right? Many things are given. One of the more popular, I think Kutzke Rebbe says this actually, one of the more popular interpretation on this is that what Rashi's telling you, Shloshina, that he never deviated in that he did the mitzvah the first time with this tremendous enthusiasm, which sometimes, you know, we merit to have some, you know, islavas and ischachas when we first do a mitzvah, but what happens after a period of time, right? At the very time, it gets old, and you lose the feeling for the mitzvah, right? We get excited, more or less, for our level, about a sukkah, a shavuos, right? Pesach. But it's harder to get excited about a Shabbos. Why? Because it happens every week. Therefore, we have halacha. Tadir v'she'eno tadir, tadir koidim. Which basically means, if you have two mitzvahs, right? Which one do you do first? Shulchan Aruch tells us the one you do first is the one that comes more frequently. Because that's the one that you're more likely going to take for granted, right? And not give it its due chashivas, its due importance. The new mitzvahs you get excited about, right? So therefore, the law tells you, no, I want you to do that mitzvah that comes more regular. Do that first. Give it more importance. And that is very tough. It's very hard to daven a Thursday morning shacharis or mincha, whatever it is, right, than a Yom Kippur, right? You have all the aids, so to speak, the help, you know, with the whole atmosphere of everything going on for Holy Day, so to speak, right? But on a regular day, it's tough to daven. It's tough to put something into it. It's easy to mouth the words, right? So it is, you know, you first put on tefillin, whatever it is, it's a very geschmack thing, but after a while, you know, take a breath. Aaron's praise is taka, very big praise here. Rashi's come to tell you, Shaloshina, that he never deviated. He did that mitzvah for the first time with such a tremendous hischachus, and his love is such a tremendous, you know, enthusiasm, and it never waned. He did it the 100th time and the 1,000th time the same way he did it the first time. And that taka is a big shvach. And that's something we need to learn out. And it's repeated over and over again in the Torah. The Chazal tell us that you should look at the Torah as if it was given to you this very day. That the mitzvahs I'm giving you today, says the Torah. And I think Rashi comes to tell us, quotes the Gemara, that you should act as if it's brand new. That's a tremendous challenge and test for us continuously, not to let it get by rote, not to let it get stale. It's the biggest problem. It's why we went into exile. I got everybody's attention. It says in the Parsha's Kisavo, right, the Parsha of brachos and the curses, and it says, Tachas asher lo avas Hashem lokecha b'simcha. Because you didn't serve Hashem b'simcha. You didn't serve Hashem b'simcha, and therefore the following things happen to you, the curses happen to us, and you'll be exiled from your land. Right? That's it. The crux is, the main key in serving Hashem is the Ivdu Hashem b'simcha, to serve Hashem b'simcha. Simcha means that you're enjoying it. By the way, if you ever want to know what your reward for in the next world for a mitzvah, it's very easy to tell. Gauge it by that degree of simcha you get in doing the mitzvah. That's how you can tell the degree you're going to get reward in the next world. This pasuk, this Rashi that I'm telling you, that's telling the Shvach Shohar and Shloshina is the key to life, guys, to the next life. It's the key to the next life. Let me tell you, we've said it many times in this class, the next world is an all spiritual world. And what Rabbeinu Yoina, this is a very big clout, that you go to the next world exactly with what you got in this world. In other words, don't think, well, you know, this world is a physical world. Sit there and indulge in my margaritas and steaks, right? And come to the next world, all spiritual, fine, good. Then I'll start, you know, hopping around in that. No, you got to understand something. That the taste, the midos, the taste and the lifestyle and what you yearn for and what you enjoy in this world, those are the very desires that you're going to have in the next world. You understand? It doesn't work that way. If you indulge in physicality, I know this sounds familiar, guys, but we have to repeat it because it's the key to life. If you enjoy physicality is one thing. It's a mitzvah to enjoy physicality. Not as an end in itself, as a means to an end, to see the greatness of Hashem. You know, you can go and visit places and see the wonders of Hashem, the unbelievable creations. I just got back from Arizona. I'm talking, you know, flying an airplane. And you really begin to see the tremendous beauty of Kadosh Baruch Hu's creation. The desert has its own beauty. And, you know, flying over these mountain ranges and the snow-capped mountains, you know, that has a certain beauty. You know, a place like Georgia here with all the vegetation and everything, that has a beauty. Everything, and you see the Floyd's aboard. Rambam says this is one of the ways you come to fear and love of Hashem, right? Okay, so enjoying the world is one thing, but you understand, what's your tachlis here, what's your purpose here, that's not a means and it's not ends in itself, right? So you spend, if you're the type of person that's a secular person, Chalila, and spends his whole life in this world just chasing after pleasures, which we're going to have in our portion. Kibbutz HaTaiva. You're chasing after taivas, whatever it is, vacations, just for the sake of vacations, right? And mead and wine and song and all these things. Then you are going to leave this world. That person's going to go to the next world, a spiritual realm. And all he's developed is his nerve endings in this world. All he's developed is his taste buds. He's got a very fine palate for wine. And that ain't going to help him in the next world. It's going to harm him. He's going to have an itch he can't scratch. He's going to have a physical desire in a pure spiritual realm. So the idea is, in this world, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to try to find a geschmack in spirituality, at least a degree in the physical. We should enjoy, as I've said many times, try to enjoy saying the bracha as much as you do enjoy the candy bar. It's hard. It is very, very hard. But, and by the way, most of you don't realize it, but you do. You do have a geschmack in spirituality. It may seem like a chore, davening. It may seem like a chore, getting ready for Shabbos. But the sign is, the telltale sign is, if it was Chalila, I wish Mrs. Burmenko was here from Russia, she could tell you. If it was taken away from you, then you'd see how much you'd miss it. And you would see that no other pleasure in the world means anything to you without your Yiddishkeit. That's the sign. Okay? Remember, Hashem knows the score. It is human nature, no matter what you have, to take it for granted. That's our nature. You know? If we have a problem and Hashem takes care of it, then we're very happy for a little bit of time, right? And then what happens? Then what happens? We find other things that we're not so happy about, right? And this continues, right? But, so, we got to appreciate, many people, you get a little cold, anything, you know. And all their problems go out the window. All they want to do is be healthy and breathe again, you know, and the asthma problems, all these things, right? They get a moment and they think about other problems. So the bottom line I'm telling you is that we really do appreciate Yiddishkeit. We wouldn't be in this class learning together if we didn't, okay? And the very fact that when you're involved in doing spirituality, you're learning Torah and you're davening, eventually that will affect your inner being. That's a very big klal, a very, very big rule that the chinuch is a book that goes over all the mitzvahs of the Torah, explains. He says, hachitzonius moreres haplimius. Outside actions affect the inner being, right? You don't necessarily feel a geschmack in your spiritual life. You know, you don't feel like giving tzedakah. Give, do, and eventually you'll start getting the inner feeling. By doing, that will affect the inner dimension. You can extrapolate this even in the secular world. You see that, you know, things that you didn't think you like, you start doing it. The opposite. That's why, by the way, it's a teva. It's a big bracha Hashem gave us that. When you're involved in something more and more, you get used to it. You get used to even the worst situations, which we wouldn't be able to survive if Hashem didn't give us that defense mechanism. Okay, so that's the lesson from Aaron. He didn't deviate. He found this halavos, this continually newness in the mitzvahs, and that is what we have to try to do here in order to go to the next world and enjoying the spirituality, a closeness to Hashem. That's why we are here. That's the point. That's the key why we're here. Torah portion continues after this with the Levim being taken. The Levim are taken as a special, they're the special tzavokas of our Kodesh Baruch Hu, they're the special legion of Hashem. And if you remember a few weeks ago, we talked about the 22,000 Levim are parallel to this 22,000 angels that are encamped around Hashem's throne of glory above. It's a parallel down here. It's an amazing concept. And our whole encampment, we went into detail. It's a famous Nachmanides Ramban, how our encampment symbolized like the heavenly encampment above. And the Mishkan is a portable Mount Sinai experience, and we went into that. The Levim are taken up. Each one is a sort of ceremony is done with them, and they are basically consecrated and sanctified for the special service of Hashem. And within the Levim, of course, we know we have the Kohanim, which are even a higher level, and even get to serve Hashem on a higher level. Okay, after this, the Torah portion talks about Pesach. It mentions about Pesach, right? And then all of a sudden, if you look at chapter 9, verse 7, and it says that there was a certain two men, who were Tameim Lenefesh Adam. They were Tameh. They were, you know, Tameh is right, spiritually impure. Several ways you can do that. And this was by taking care of a dead person. And some people say it was either that they were taking care of the bones of Yosef, they were carrying that Aaron of Yosef, or that they were involved in the burial of Nadab and Avihu. Remember the two sons of Aaron. Okay, whatever it was, they were Tameh Nefesh. They were Tameh from a dead body, and therefore the halacha is you cannot partake of the Paschal offering, Korban Pesach, when you're Tameh. Okay? So this upset them. Now, by the way, when I say that, that doesn't mean they have a sin. It means Anus Rachmana Patre. We have a rule that if you're an Anus, that for no fault of your own, you couldn't do a mitzvah, Hashem putters you. You're forgiven. I mean, there's no sin here. You understand? For example, if a person, Chalila, that could happen, people in the Holocaust, you know, in the camps, they're not going to be held responsible that they didn't keep Shabbos or didn't keep Kosher, right? Right, you see stories, unbelievable stories, how they smuggled in Shofar and this and that. But truly, they were exempt from the mitzvahs in that situation, right? Right, but, so same thing here. So Hashem doesn't, that's not a sin. And here too, these people were involved in a very important mitzvah. We know a mace mitzvah, taking care of the dead, is an extremely important mitzvah. You drop everything to do this, right? And therefore they couldn't partake of the Paschal offering. But the amazing lesson here is listen to their response. They weren't happy with, okay, no, you know, got an excuse. They felt missing. Listen to this. Vayomer l'anashim, they said, Lama nigara levilti hakrivas korban Hashem. Why is it that we miss out from doing the korban Pesach? You know, I understand it's not a sin. We understand we're not going to be punished, but that's not the point. We don't get to do it. You miss out on a $10 million business deal. A few years ago, I used to use $1 million because of inflation. I have to make this a $10 million business deal, right? No sin. But you missed it. You missed the opportunity. You have an agmas nefesh. You feel bad. You missed the opportunity. They missed out on a $1 billion deal. They didn't get to do it. Who cares? It's not a sin. It is a sin. We want to serve Hashem. We love Hashem. We want to do the mitzvahs. Dang it, we didn't get to do this mitzvah. It's not fair. I mean, it doesn't make sense. We're doing another mitzvah. Isn't this something we can do? So Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu says, which is an amazing line. You got to look at this line, guys. Verse 8. Imdu, stand here. Ve'eshma ma'yitzav Hashem lachem. Stand here, and I'll see what Hashem says. Says Rashi, Ashra Yulad Isha, happy is one born of a lady that he's shikach mutach, that he's so guaranteed, shikos mashia roitse, that anytime he wants to speak to Hashem, he knows he can just turn and talk to Hashem. And you're going to see more of Moshe's singular level as we go on towards the end of the parsha. But anyway, Moshe says, wait here, I'll talk to my Rebbe and tell you what the halacha is. And he talks to his Rebbe, the Rabbani Shalom. And he says, you know, sure enough, you're right. There is a cop, as a matter of fact, whether they were right or not is relative, because the truth is, because of what they did, a new mitzvah was instituted. Do you hear this? If you have such a yearning to serve Hashem, and you feel like you're missing, because of that, another mitzvah, another holiday was added, holy day was added to the Torah. Raymond Beda hates it when we say holidays. He says, the Goyim have holidays. We have holy days. All right, so, and what is that? And that's a concept called Pesach Sheni. Now, today, you don't see much significance to it as far as observance, right? What it is 30 days after the first Pesach, if a situation like this arises where someone could not offer the Paschal offering, he's tamei or other reasons, he's got a second chance, right? Second chance, 3 days later, again to offer to participate in a Korban Pesach, matzah, maror, whole bit, right? Okay, so that's well good, but the lesson here is, if the observance of Pesach Sheni is not with us to that degree, the lesson sure is. And that lesson is, there's no room for giving up. There's no room for, it shows you how beloved our feelings are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that if we feel we're missing, right, and we want to serve Hashem, Hashem will invent, so to speak, another holy day for us, just to satisfy these people's spiritual longing. Such a beautiful, it's a beautiful concept. So, lesson for us is, there's many times, there's times that happen that we're potter from a mitzvah, that we're exempt from a mitzvah, right? It shouldn't be with the attitude, right, that, oh, got out of that, you know, like a kid running out of school, you know. That shouldn't be. It should be, shucks, I missed out. I missed out in serving Hashem. Again, the idea back to Aaron, lighting the menorah, the idea that this is our life, Kiyem Chayenu, and this is what we live for, and we should have an enjoyment and a simcha in serving Hashem, that even if we're an oinus and we miss out on doing a mitzvah for no fault of our own, we should realize that we missed out on the opportunity of serving Hashem. That's the lesson here. Okay. Torah portion goes on. And it's going to tell us about the murmurings. We're going to start some murmurings here. Some complaints about the man, and then complaints that we didn't have meat. Okay. And again, all these complaints are from, as the Torah describes them in our Torah portion, the Asap Suf in chapter 11, verse 4. Which is the Erev Rav, the mixed multitude. Okay? They're the ones that instigate all these problems. And of course, they're part of Klal Yisrael. We're held responsible for not rebuking or whatever it is. But realize, the Torah is going to tell you something right now, right off the bat. Before we get into any of these complaints, the Torah is going to tell you the tremendous praise of this nation. First of all, Does anybody remember Pirkei Avos where it says that we tested Hashem 10 times in the desert? I've got one of the, I think in the Gemara it says, Ashrei, happy is a generation where they can number the times they tested Hashem. You know, 10 times, 40 years, not bad. You know, they can number it. And of course they held a strict account for who they were, who their leader was, and again, as we explained, each one of their sins needs an explanation. They had tremendous motive, you know, we're going to see this. The motives behind their sins wasn't so simple. It wasn't just stam, a taiva, you know, a desire, a lust. We're going to explain this. But before we get to all that, the Torah is going to tell us the greatness. We're going to tell you who we're talking about. The nation of Israel is a nation that traveled al pi Hashem Yisrael, Ba'pi Hashem Yechanu, chapter 9, verse 18. This is a nation that traveled by the word of Hashem and encamped by the word of Hashem. Okay? And if you look at these verses, verses 18 through 22, it's going to tell you that there's times that they were traveling for many days. You know, 3 million people. We're talking about babies, we're talking about older people, we're talking about nursing mothers. No one complained. And there was times where they just set up tent, right? And then they got comfortable, you know, you unpack and everything. And the next day they had to pack up again and leave. And no one complained. Again, old people, babies, nursing mothers, nobody complained. And it goes on. And those are those times that we encamped a month. And we didn't like the place. You know, stuck there for a month. And always wondering, at any moment, we could be told, pack up and leave. And no one complained. 3 million people. Most time you get 50 people together for 10 minutes. They can't agree on anything. Right? 3 million. You could know board meetings, right? 3 million people. 40 years, constant traveling, never knowing when or how long, not one complaint. The Torah tells you this right here at the beginning before we get into these so-called murmurings. Okay? To get a perspective who we're talking about. Okay? Very important. Look at those verses when you get a chance in detail. By the way, we also learn out on this, Al-Pi Hashem Yisrael, that a person, they travel, this literally means they travel by the word of Hashem, Al-Pi Hashem, so Chazal learned out from here, a person has to travel by the word of Hashem, in other words, on a person's lips, Al-Pi, on the lips, on the mouth of a person, always has to be the name of Hashem, right? Bizras Hashem, you know, we say Yitz Hashem, right? Baruch Hashem, thank Hashem, we thank Hashem when things go right, and Yitz Hashem, it should go right, right? That's what Al-Pi Hashem, everything should be Al-Pi Hashem when we're traveling, when we're camping, whatever we're doing. Okay? In general, also, whatever we do, we have to understand, is this Al-Pi Hashem, what we're doing? Okay. All right. Torah portion goes on, talks about the Chatzotzros. The Chatzotzros wore these trumpets, silver trumpets. They were only made, this particular ones were only made for Moshe Rabbeinu. They had to be hidden afterwards. No one else was allowed to use them. And they were used for various reasons. There was times of war, times of holy days, and of traveling. And different things are discussed with them, how they were blown and so forth and so on. Then we have the traveling procedures that are explained in chapter 10, verses, I believe, 11 through approximately 25. Chayav ben Reuel, Yisro, Moshe's father-in-law, comes into the scene again, and Moshe Rabbeinu asks him to please stay with us, and he goes back home, and there's a machlokes in the Gemara. Why did he go back home? Either to convert his family, or he did stay with them. We don't know exactly what happened in the end. Okay, different opinions on that. Then we will travel 3 days, and it says, this is chapter 10, verse 33, we traveled 3 days, and we complained about this, by the way, which in itself is a lesson. Many times we have certain hardships, and we complain to Hashem, and Hashem really means it for our benefit. And this is one of the examples. It says we traveled 3 days, and we're tired. You look at Rashi there in chapter 10, verse 33, Mahalach Shleishis Yamim. Oh, he says Mahalach Shleishis Yamim Halchu B'Yom Echad, that they went a 3-day journey in one day. And I know it's the mountain you travel 3 days, they went in one day, and they were complaining. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chafetz Lachnisam Le'eretz Miyad, because Hashem was anxious. He wanted us to enter Eretz Yisrael immediately. And this is what we complained about. So again, in our everyday life, there's certain things, certain hardships we may be going through. It's Hashem wants certain things to happen for us. The last 6 months in Egypt, it got very tough. Hashem did that, right? We explained that Cheshbon, so we can get out early. So we never know what is good or what is bad for us. And things that might seem tough, Hashem has in mind good things for us. And that's also, if you look at chapter 11, verse 1, similar thing, Hashem got mad. I meant this for your good, that you should enter the land immediately. Okay. We complain about the man here in our Torah portion. And we need to explain this, because the man we know was an unbelievable, miraculous food. Oh, did I skip something here? I did skip something. I skipped very important 2 verses, which Chazal tells us is considered a book of the Torah in itself. I don't know how that works. Be'yehibin Seya Aaron. These 2 verses, there's a verse in Mishle, in Proverbs, that says like 7 pillars, 7 pillars, 7 books. The Torah, we know, we always refer to the Torah as Chamishei Chumshei Torah, 5 books. And another level, it's 7 books. And Bamidbar is 3. Bamidbar up to this point of the Yehudim Bin Soya is considered 1 book. These 2 verses, these 85 letters, are considered a separate book. And in them is contained, says the Vilna Gaon, the entire history of the world, 7,000 year history. Everything is contained here. Everything that's going to happen to us in Golas is contained in here. It's a very mystical thing. And then afterwards, it's considered a separate book. Rav Chaim Volozhin, the main student, the main Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, he came, he was explaining these verses once. He even saw Aaron, he was explaining that whenever we go into exile, the Aaron would precede us. The Torah would precede us, established our Torah first. You remember where we learned this out originally from? Don't you guys remember this? Yehuda, Yaakov said Yehuda ahead before he came down to Egypt, right? That set the precedent. The Torah always has to precede our settlement. At any rate, he came to this part that the Torah would always precede our new exile. And then he said the last stanza, the last station, will be across the seas in America. And then he broke down and cried. And he says, oh boy, is that going to cost? Oy vey, is that going to cost? They say he saw the assimilation, that we would survive, but what a cost. The assimilation, the intermarriage rate. The last stanza, he said, before the end of the exile would be America. We complain about the man, as I mentioned. It says the mixed multitude of Asafsuf in chapter 11, verse 4, his avu taiva, they desired a desire. Here. They desired, well, they didn't have a desire. Here it is. They desired to have a desire so they could squelch it. They wanted to serve Hashem on a higher level. One of the highest levels to Hashem, Alpi Kabbalah, is eating. Eating, you extract certain godly sparks from the food. If you eat Batara, the Shulchan is considered like a Mizbeach. It's an amazing concept. And you're elevating all of creation, especially when you eat meat. Because a cow eats from the vegetation, right? And the vegetation grows from the inanimate, and you have all 4 parts of creation, inanimate, vegetation, animal, man, all being raised. The man had none of these properties. The man was a pure spiritual food. The man, says Ramban, was the food that the angels eat on high. In fact, he says it was pure spiritual, and when it came down to earth, it kind of got a little bit magushim. It got a little bit of a physicality to it, kind of like Eliyahu. He used to go back, you know, goes back and forth. Comes down to earth, he gets a little bit of physicality to stay in this world. Right? But it's pure spiritual fluid. It's completely enveloped in the limbs. There was no waste products from the mind. Know that. And it gave you spiritual insights into the Torah. It was a spiritual food. As a matter of fact, the greater you are, the more spiritual insights you got. That's why it says Yeshua's portion of man was as great as all of Israel. Doesn't mean he ate a lot. Right? It means that's the main student, right, of Moshe Rabbeinu. His portion of man, his Chidushi HaTorah, his inside thought, was as great as all of them. With all this, it left B'nai Yisrael very little Aveda, very little service of Hashem in eating. Right? And they wanted to serve Hashem on a higher level. A very common denominator we have here of some of the sins of the great. Flip over to the other side, we'll explain. Mechtav Meliyahu, Rav Dessler, and Strive for Truth, he talks about this, that the sin of Adam, the sin of Nadav and Aviu, the sin of these people, were all in this fine level of gaiva, of a certain conceit, a certain ego. We're not talking about our ego. An ego that they, Korach too actually, that they wanted to serve Hashem on a higher level. That's not necessarily what Hashem wants from us. You have to accept your role. Whatever I assign you, says Hashem, you accept that and serve me on that level. We have a very big problem today with roles, people knowing their roles and being satisfied who they are. And these people, even though they meant, like they meant well, so to speak, right? But that's considered an ego too. That's not what Hashem asked for you. All right. So again, it's a sin, but it's a classic example where it has to be, you know, dissected. Their sins weren't petty sins. These are great, great people. And here you read the verse, they had a desire, a lust. Yeah, it sounds like very prustive people who just wanted meat. You know, that's not what's going on here. Okay. So that's one thing. And the man eliminated this avoda of extracting these holy sparks and everything. It was a completely spiritual food, in other words. And there was no process of extracting spiritual from physical, which you have with normal food. You don't have that with the man. It's already done for us. Okay, and they want to serve Hashem on a higher level. Who asked you? Basically, that was their sin. Okay. By the way, again, another example where we complain about something, again, the theme of Madrig Islam, according to the level, and Hashem made it for our good. So we said the 3 days traveling. Here too, it says in verse 5, you know, we remember in Egypt, and they say, well, we ate, and they mention five things here. Now these five things, they're mentioning particularly, because these are the five things that the man did not taste like. Okay? So if I translate these right, I think kushim is cucumbers, abatichim is melons, chatzir, betzalim, chatzir, you got his okra? That I hear. Okay, well, I can understand the South, they would translate that way. And then we got garlic, onions, cucumbers, melons, leeks, I think is the one of them. All right. So lemaisa, we complain about these things. The truth is, these things, if you look at Rashi, are bad for nursing mothers. And that's why Hashem is capable of the man tasting everything. But for our benefit, it didn't taste like these things, and we complained. Again, according to their level. Okay, the man is described here, and there was tremendous test of the man, as we mentioned before. It fell on your doorstep, or far away from your doorstep, depending on your level, and so forth and so on. So, at any rate, they then complain about not having meat. Well, they wanted, as I said, the man could taste like meat, but the mice, they wanted meat that looked like meat. Okay? So what is given to them at this time is the slav, which is these quail. Now, there's a debate whether this quail, twice we have quail fall in the Torah. There's a debate whether it fell 40 years in the desert and it had all the properties of man, or it just happened these a couple times. But with an amazing insight here, they had a desire. Okay, let's look at it in Pashtus and just in a shot here. They had a desire for meat. Okay? Right? They had a desire for meat. So Hashem says, okay, I'm going to give you meat. It's just amazing insight on any physical desire. So if you look at chapter 11, verses 19 and 20, He says, I'm going to give you meat. You know what? I'm not going to give it just for one day. And you're not going to just have it for 2 days, or five, or 10, I'm reading you exactly, or 20. But you're going to have it 30 days, a month, until it comes out of your nose. And if you look at Rashi there, Rashi, I think, was going to tell you that they, it was like, they, let me get the exact wording of Rashi. This is Rashi's language. They distanced themselves from, they pushed it away more than they wanted. In other words, more disgusting to them, right? The degree of disgust now is greater than the degree of the desire for the physical zach. It's an amazing insight. Any desire, any lust that a person thinks he's got to have it, right? He's got to have it, right? And if he gets it, and he has all of it that he wants, it will very soon, very, very soon, become more disgusting to him than his desire that he really wanted, that degree. There's only one exception, and that's spirituality, because the neshama cannot be filled. Physical desires reach such a satiation point that finally the neshama wakes up and transfers itself to the body and gives it an ejection notice. This is disgusting. What are we doing with this stuff? We need spirituality. Right? You hear this? That is a common denominator no matter what the physical desire is. It's interesting. When you talk about Yetzer Horas, you usually talk about two big Yetzer Horas. Taiva, lust, desires, and kovod, honor, ego, you know? Now the honor, covet, is a different thing. That's a bigger problem in a certain sense, because it's almost a spiritual thing. And no matter how much honor a person has, he's never satisfied. You know? How a big basketball player you are, you want to be the greatest of all time. You know, whatever it is, right? So it's always... But Lemaisa, this is the thing with the physical desires, and then we have another tremendous lesson with this. If you look at the end, what is this place called? Hibris Hataiva. It's called the burying of the desires. Because there, they buried their desires. And says Rashi, that even in the grave, they were calling out for meat. Now, I didn't see this anywhere. But according to what we said earlier, which is definitely an emes, Rabbeinu Yonah's klal, that you leave this world, right, with the desires you developed. You take those desires in the next world. They desire, I mean, the Pashtus, again, according to the level, they had a desire for meat, physicality, even in the grave, going to the next world. They took those desires with them. Okay. At this point, Moshe Rabbeinu says, it's too much for me. Can't take it. I need help. All right? So Hashem gives him 70 elders. 70 is a very significant number. Very, very significant number, as we've had many times in Torah. 70 elders, great, great men, who get a prophecy and share the burden of running the nation with Moshe Rabbeinu. And they get their prophecy off of Moshe Rabbeinu. Rashi's example is like a candle lighting others, and it doesn't diminish its own light. Remember this. Because this is going to be the mistake Miriam makes. That she compares Moshe Rabbeinu, Chas V'Shalom, to every other prophet. The truth is, it's just the opposite. Everybody's prophet, the source, is from Moshe Rabbeinu. Do you know that? Yechezkel, Yeshaya, anybody you read about later, their prophecy is somehow rooted with Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the father of all prophets. Let's try to talk about this a little bit more later. But in the meantime, these 70 elders were picked how? Right? Well, you got 12 tribes, right? So, anyways, there were even number picked for a tribe, 6 from each tribe. That equals 72. There was 2 left over. The 2 left over were, I think, actually cousins of Moshe Rabbeinu, Eldad and Medad. Eldad and Medad, great, great people. And they were prophesizing. And evidently, they were prophesizing about something that upset Yeshua very much. Because you see, as they stayed in the camp prophesizing, Yan Yeshua ben Nun, Yeshua answered, Yeshua was, good question, because you, this is important to know, Yeshua was Moshe Rabbeinu's main, no, not his son, his main student. He will be the next leader of Israel. He's going to be the next
Joshua.
Next leader of Israel. As a matter of fact, since you brought it up, I'll just tell you what the prophecy was. The prophecy that Eldar and Medar were saying was, Moshe Neis, Yeshua Machnis. Moshe is going to die. Yeshua is going to take us into the land of Israel. By the way, the first letters of those, Moshe Neis, Yeshua Machnis, Memayim, from water. Moshe's whole destiny has to do with water. Torah is compared to Mayim. Moshe is put in the Nile River and taken out. He dies. The verdict for him to die, not to enter Israel, is because he struck the water, the rock for water, right? Moshe Meis, because of Mayim, Yeshua Machnis. So what does Yeshua say? Oh no. Levayan, Yeshua answers, Misharis Moshe, the servant, the minister of Moshe, from his youth. Vayomer, Adoni, Moshe, my master Moshe, I want you to stay my master. I don't want to be the master of Israel. That's what's going on here. Shut him up, Klayim, shut him up. It's blasphemy what I'm listening to, that you're going to die and that I'm going to take his... You hear this? Yeshua didn't hear it. At least one quality from Moshe Rabbeinu, his tremendous humility. And another huge lesson here. What's Moshe Rabbeinu's response? It's such beautiful Torah here, just the humility back and forth. Moshe Rabbeinu's response to Yeshua, Mekane Atali, are you jealous for me? Umi ten kulam Hashem nevim, alavai that all the nations of Israel should be prophets. Right? It's say for me, a person that usually has jealousy, except in a couple areas. And one of them is you're never jealous of your children outdoing you, or your students outdoing you, which is really the same thing. Children and students are the same thing, right? Halakhically even. All right? So that's the conversation going on here. Okay, then we get to the end of the Torah portion. We have here, I'm going to skip around a little bit here, we have this famous Lashon Hara of Miriam, which again needs to be analyzed. We're talking about someone very great. And they complained to Moshe because he married a Cushis. this is a euphemism. I'm just going to show you black. It's not beautiful again. If you look at Rashi, very simple, Cushis, is that a Ethiopian, a Negro, whatever it is? Cushis, what it says is that, you know, this idea of an Ayin Hara, if you look at Rashi there, he gives several interpretations, and one of them is, he says that just like you call, you know, you have someone very attractive, you know, so you don't say, Hashem Noi, she was so beautiful, didn't want to give her an Ayin Hara, so you call him Cushis, you call him by something ugly. I'm reading Rashi. Ka'adam Akuris, but not Naya, just like a person calls his beautiful son Cushi. Yeah, Negro. Kedei Shiloti Shlopo Ayin Hara. So the Ayin Hara won't get a hold of him. I enjoyed that. All right. At any rate, it's another one I'm not going to let on the internet. I got more censored on the internet. My 60-minute tapes on the internet are like 3.5 minutes. Okay. All right. Okay. Now, let's talk about the Lashon Hara of Miriam for a second here. This is the classic example. There's six zichronos. There's six things you try to remember every day. People say these verses, and one of them, you should remember Mahmud Har Sinai, that we were at Har Sinai and got the Torah. You should remember what Amalek did to you. Remember you came out of Egypt. Remember Shabbos Kodesh, right? Remember how you tested Hashem in the desert, the golden calf. And this is the sixth one. Remember the Lashon Hara of Miriam, right? And by the way, this is an eternal, that's a question that's asked. I mean, L'chaya, we're speaking Lashon Hara of Miriam. If you say, remember the Lashon Hara of Miriam, you're speaking Lashon Hara of Miriam. No, but this is a tremendous eternal merit to Miriam, that she's going to be used as the example how careful you have to be not to speak Lashon Hara. Because who was Miriam? Miriam was Moshe's sister, and Miriam loved Moshe, and she didn't speak behind his back. She said this right to him. As a matter of fact, it's very hard to find out what the Lashon Hara is here. She saw it in love. Why did you step away from your wife? Basically, that's it. You know, what's going on here? She's beautiful physically beautiful, and she's beautiful of deeds, says Rashi. What's the problem? Oh, you're a prophet? We're prophets too. We didn't separate. You know, we continue normal relations. All right, and still, with all that, she meant for the good of her brothers. I'm about to explain. That's considered Lashon Hara. How much more so, you have to be careful when your mom is on purpose speaking derogatory about somebody. Next parsha is the spies. They didn't learn the lesson and spoke Lashon Hara in the land of Israel. That's the juxtaposition of these two parshas. But let me tell you a little insight of what Miriam was trying to do. I probably remember this from last year, but look like you're interested. No. Chazor said it. Very important.
Right.
Okay. We mentioned before, we mentioned many times, that Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that the next leader of Israel was going to be, let's see if you guys are paying attention. Oh, well, they were. All right, Pinchas, right. And why was he afraid of Pinchas?
Zealot.
Zealot. Good. And which means what? What does that mean?
Hot-headed.
No, Chas v'Shalom. No, not hot-headed. Zealot means that you're one of these unique individuals that is so, like you're, it's like Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel.
So black and white.
It's like you're so on fire about Hashem, you're holding on a certain level with no compromise, taking no prisoners, you know, which is fantastic. You need those kind of people in Israel. And that's the way it's going to be in times of Mashiach. But we're not holding by that. It's like Hashem originally wanted to create the world by judgment, strict judging, justice. But he saw we couldn't take it. So he was Mishtatef. He made mercy a partner of justice. Right? All right? So the idea is that you have to have a leader. Can only be a leader if you can relate to the people. Relate to the people. Yeah. So this is, by the way, we have Yehuda and Yosef encountering each other at the beginning of Vayigash. You have these two opposites. Atah Yaducha, Achicha Yaducha. Yaakov says, you, Yehuda, your brothers will know. Yehuda will be the king of Israel. Yosef is the Nazir. He's a cut above. He's way up here. His Lashon Hara and his brothers also needs that explanation. He was so above, he couldn't understand certain things they were doing that were allowed, but according to his level as a Nazir, they weren't. Here? That's the same type of thing you have here. Miriam was afraid that Moshe Rabbeinu was becoming too spiritual. If he becomes any more spiritual, he can't lead Israel into Israel. Because if you lose connection with the people, if you become like an angel, if you go 40 days and 40 nights without eating, right? And if you don't even have relations with your wife, then you're getting more and more removed, more Ish Elohim, more Elohim than Ish. And therefore, you're not going to be able to lead Israel. Hashem's going to have to appoint someone else who can relate to the people better. Moshe, come back down. Come back down to earth. Live with your wife. Be more a man of the people, so to speak. Okay, I'm simplifying it and I'm pressed the matter, but okay? But that was part of her kavana. Okay? She wanted Moshe to go on leading Israel. Okay? The reason, I think it's Pasha, the reason that she slammed so hard, right, RN2, is that we have the 13 principles of faith at stake here. Hashem has to make it clear for all time, right, that you have to understand once and for all, if you look at the 13 principles, pay about four of them concern Moshe Rabbeinu, right? That first of all prophecies are true, right? And that links in, Moshe Rabbeinu is the father of all prophets. That's another one of the 13 principles. And that the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, and there will be no other Torah. That has to remain. You can see, you know, what they're claiming out there, you know. The Goy Shavel, the claims that the Torah is no longer a Chalila relevant, right, that we're rejected people. All these are not what the prophecies of Moshe Rabbeinu says. And right off the bat, if right now Miriam says, You know, we also are prophets. And what is she doing? She meant well, but Lemaisa, she's putting Moshe Rabbeinu on their level. You're a prophet, we're a prophet. Then you know what? Other people would say, oh, we're also a prophet. No, 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 you got to understand something. Moshe is the father of prophets. There's nobody like him. He's on a whole different category. Anything that's said to him can never be revoked. Not realizing the consequences of her actions, Hashem has to make things straight. And that's what these verses are going to tell you. Look inside, chapter 12, verse 6. Shimnu na devorai, listen. If there's prophets among you, I come to them in a vision, in a dream. Lo ken avdi Moshe, not my servant Moshe. The whole basi namanhu. Very, very stark words. He is the most faithful in my house. Pe el pe adabir bo. I speak to him mouth to mouth. Now, I can't go into all the Kabbalistic meanings of what that means, pe el pe. But that means one thing, that Moshe was a complete empty receptacle. He was completely nullified. As it says, the Moshe haya anav mikol adam al pnei adamah. He was the most humble man on earth, and therefore he's the greatest prophet. You know, that goes hand in hand, right? To the degree you nullify yourself, Hashem can enter you. It should say per eloizen. It should say mouth to ear. I speak to a mouth to ear. That's how you speak to a person. What's per el per? Hashchina midabers mitaych biroino. Moshe Rabbeinu was such a puppet in Hashem's hands. He was such completely nullified for Hashem that the nevuah that was coming peh el peh, simultaneously as he was getting prophecy, he was speaking prophecy. The Shechina talked through his throat. You understand it? It's like amazing. That's why, by the way, you'll see all of the prophets, they'll use the expression Ko Amar Hashem. Like Yishayahu, Yechezkel. This is what Hashem said. You know what Ko is? Ko is like. That's not the way Moshe Rabbeinu prophesies. Moshe Rabbeinu prophesies Zeh HaDavar Asher Tziva Hashem. This. Zeh, remember? Zeh Keli Vaveo. What's Zeh always implicate? That you can point to it. Mamashis. Zeh. Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah is in the category of Zeh. It was clear. I speak to him not in visions, lo b'chidos, not in parables. U'tzibunas Hashem yabit. He sees the actual image of God. I don't know what this means. U'madua lo yireisam. Why didn't you fear to speak against my personal servant, Moshe Rabbeinu? That's Moshe Rabbeinu. Zeh hadavar. Hadavar means the thing, the actual thing. Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy, there's nothing like it. It's like you can point to it. All other prophets are Ko. You know, Ko Amar Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu Zeh Hadavar, Hadibor, Hadavar, the thing, this is it. Okay. All these tests in the desert, by the way, I have to tell you right now, you should know, all these tests were paving the way for Israel throughout all our exiles. That's all I'm going to say on that. But there's everything is a tremendous individual test of certain Yetzirahs that we're going to face in Golus. And if we did not conquer the way in the desert, this generation, we, us, you and I, and all our ancestors would never have been able to survive any of the tests that were parallel to this throughout our exiles. Let's talk about this concept of humility. A person, that people have a very misconception of what Anivas is, humility. Being humble is not going around. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm a nothing. That's not humility. That's being naive. Moshe Rabbeinu knew who he was. What does it mean that he was humble? He recognized, and this is no matter what a person is, humility is not denying, Chas v'Shalom, not denying the talents and the brachos Hashem gave you. That's mamash blasphemy. That's being an ingrate. But recognizing that whatever personal assessment, you know, whatever you have, is not achieved by your own power. That's what it is. But it all is also in the Eibshter, that you recognize the source of it all. That's from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That is humility. Okay? That's what Moshe was. Moshe realized that he was just a vessel, and that Hashem could have taken anybody. L'chora, I don't know how. It's a little difficult. But at any rate, that Hashem is the one that is giving him all this ability to prophesize and all these other things. That is true humility. It's one of the reasons that Titaka, if he had a speech at Infinite, a speech somehow. Great.
Impediment.
Yeah, that's the one. Another one of them four syllable words. Dang it. I should have stayed in Lubbock. Okay. Well, I'm moving along here. Okay. I didn't even see this part. You know, it's interesting. You got to be, we just said ko. All the prophets, the prophesied with ko, which means like. Not exactly. Well, kaf before the word, that's what it means. That prefix. Before a word, kaf is like. So if you look at that verse, we're talking about the sins of these great people according to their level. It's amazing. If you read the verses, they'll go right by you if you don't analyze it. It says, kimis oinanim. They were like complainers. Kimis oinanim. It never says what they complain about, by the way. And sometimes Hashem gets angry at them. I just want you to know that we have a klal, rule, that Hashem never counts an evil thought as a deed. I guess these people were on such a level that Hashem did. Because they were like complainers, kimisainanim, but they didn't actually complain. They only thought about the complaint. Similar to, by the way, if you look back, Sara Imenu, when she said she laughed, Bikirba inside of her, she never laughed. She never laughed. It was inside. Because of the level, Hashem counted it as if it was here. Same thing here. Kim Misainanim. They were light complainers. And that's why it says it was Ra the Ozne Hashem. It was evil in the ears of Hashem. And he heard it, Vayishma. But no one else heard it. Because they never verbalized it. Only Hashem heard it because it was a thought process. And still they were slammed. Because that's the level that these people are on. Okay? Part of that also, that the idea of complaining, it's not important that they were actually complaining or aren't some of Grossman, what you're saying exactly, or what their complaint was. The very fact that they could complain on their level was a sign of ingratitude. Kodesh Baruch Hu's dwelling in your midst. He's taking care of you. You read the account of the clouds here in our parsha. Look at Rashi. We're talking about the clouds, the four clouds all around him, and another one going ahead, smoothing out the paths, right? And the man, and this tremendous, and how can you complain about anything? You should be you should be in Simcha that you're a Yid and Hashem's dwelling with you. Yeah, that's a good point. This is a key one. V'hi ben Tzai Aron was their tefillah sederach. Says Daskin Balai Tesvas. They're a traveling player. You know what a traveling player is like? And Bnei Zohar traveling player. It was called V'hi ben Tzai Aron. That was a traveling player. More significant is, or maybe it's the same thing, what does it mean as a traveling player? It means that we recognize that any problems encountered in the Golos, in our travels, is first and foremost taken care of by our Torah. The Torah paves the way for us. And again, going back to what I said before, if we consider, the Torah preceded the encampment, it worked. The Torah went ahead, right? And there they understood where the Anan was, they were to encamp. That's the symbolism of basically that we are supposed to have the Torah as the main priority in our traveling through Golos. And that taka is the greatest protection of Tefillah Sederach. Right, so we'll close with this. V'hi ben Tzai Aron, significant. We just finished Shavuos, and we're reading about these verses that we say when we take out the Ark all the time with the Torah. It's, again, as we mentioned before, this Tefillah Sederach of ours that we have to take throughout our lives, not just in Golos, within the Golos, that we have to realize after Shavuos, the test, again, is not Shavuos. It's relatively easy to get excited about Shavuos. But now, it's been a couple weeks, right? Shavuos is in the past. We're going into a summer where you have a lot of distractions that can blur your vision of what your traveling is supposed to be consisted of. I'm talking literally traveling. People are going to be traveling this summer. Remember V'hi ben Tzai Aron. You've got to set time aside for Torah. If you want to have a success and you want to have a better physical vacation, have the Torah traveling with you. Torah tapes. Whatever it is, set times for learning. Do not let the summer take away what you were able to glean and gather in from Shavuos. Right? It's a shame sometimes, I think. Or maybe Taka, that's why Kosh Baruch Hu made Shavuos close to the summer. So that's the Taka. You need that extra fortification going into a summer where you can be distracted. You have the Torah. The kunst now is to strengthen ourselves in Torah throughout the summer months and going into the 3 weeks So we should be relatively strong when we come back and prepare for Yom Noroim. Good Shabbos.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.